Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrar's Food Safety Inc. podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions relevant to both the food safety industry as well as cannabis and hemp. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjrfsi.com/webinars or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
All right, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to today's webinar. My name is Parker, and I'm a member of the marketing team at the Perry Johnson Companies, and I'll be helping to facilitate today's webinar and offer support to the speakers. I'm also joined by Commercial Manager of Food Safety and Supply Chain, Chris Reno. Chris joined us in 2022 and has over 20 years experience in the hospitality, service, and retail food sector. So with that, let's get started. I'm going to hand it over to Chris.
Yeah, Parker, thanks so much. Really excited for today's presentation. I want to introduce Tammy Van Buren as our esteemed guest and speaker. Tammy has more than 25 years experience in quality control, 7 years experience as an SQF practitioner, responsible for implementing, monitoring, maintaining SQF systems at various certified sites such as Treehouse Foods and D&W Fine Pack. Tammy is currently the SQF Compliance Manager overseeing the management evolution of SQFI's Compliance and Integrity Program using data and statistics. So with that, Tammy, I will turn it over to you, and then I will jump back in for the question and answers at the end.
Okay, so thank you for the introductions. I'm so glad to be here with you all today. Looking very forward to sharing some information. And so let's just jump in and get started. And we'll, again, answer questions at the end. So feel free to chat those questions in, and we'll try to get to them all before we sign off. So the title of today's webinar is Utilizing Data to Focus on the Future. And so as the compliance and integrity manager here at SQFI, I focus on a lot of data. So let's look at the first half of that. So utilizing data to focus on the future. So utilizing data, where do we get our data from? So here at SQFI, and I'm sure probably all of you all can relate, you all have a lot of data streams, right, coming in. And so just some of the things that we look at, we're looking at top nonconformances. To do that, we have an audit database. We have a Power BI that we utilize. We also look at recalls and outbreaks. And we're going to talk, quite heavily about those today as information that we use to try to predict the future and determine where our next focus is going to be. We have a couple of different ways that we do that. We utilize a food recall reporter. You all may have seen that on the internet. It's got about 20 years worth of FDA and USDA recall information in it. And so that gives us a nice overview of where recalls have been and where, hopefully we can use that data to predict where they're going. And then we rely on third-party emails. In a 12-month time period, we will typically see about 6,000 recall notifications around the world. SQFI is a global organization, and so we monitor all the recalls that are happening around the world to make sure that SQF sites are not involved, or if they are involved, that they have let us know. Because those of you out there that are SQF certified, you are required to notify SQFI as well as your certification body. If that just happens to be Perry Johnson, then you have to notify us when you're involved in a recall, an outbreak, or a regulatory event like a warning letter. So, here in the US, we don't see quite that many, but globally, we're around almost 6,000 in a 12-month time frame. We look at audit scores. So we have a compliance database that allows us to look at audits. It allows us to see trends within audits. Each audit is kind of given a score. It's kind of looked at like compared to what a normal audit looks like. And then it'll flag anomalies. So it's using a little bit of predictability in that database, a little bit of AI, if you will, to help us to see areas where we need to focus. Now, a lot of people will refer to me as the Excel queen. I love a good Excel spreadsheet. I use pivot tables every single day to slice and dice and view data in various ways. So if that's something you're not familiar with, please learn how to use pivot tables. It's a game changer. It will help you to make sense of your data when all you have is an Excel spreadsheet. Audit preparation, we also encourage our auditors that auditors have to be prepared for an audit. So hopefully sites don't have to prepare for an audit. I hate when I hear sites say, oh, I got to prepare for my audit, or I'm not prepared for my audit, I need to delay it. Because audits, from a site perspective, you shouldn't have to prepare for them. You should be audit ready 365 days a year. However, auditors need to prepare. So as they are assigned an audit, they need to do a little bit of research on the site. So internet search or engines. You know, I hate to say Google that, but there are many days that I just have to tell people, you just really need to Google that. So, you know, do I have a good risk assessment template? No. We don't have a risk assessment template that we will send out, but Google it. There are so many out there to choose from. You know, you can find one that meets your exact needs. So when all else fails, Google it, okay? Regulatory dashboard, also each site that's registered here in the US with the FDA, you can find them on the regulatory dashboard. You can find information about any issues they've had, any recalls, any visits, and you can see those non-conformances or issues that were identified. So check out the regulatory dashboard, particularly if you're looking at supplier information. That's how you can apply and use that. You know, I encourage our auditors to use it, but you know, I'm sure you all have suppliers that you need to keep an eye on as well. That regulatory dashboard is a great source of data and information. And then, you know, good old surveys. And we use SurveyMonkey. We use Microsoft Forms to collect survey information. I will say, if you haven't checked out our new website, sqfi.com, we just launched an updated brand new website just a couple of weeks ago. And if you haven't checked it out, please do that. We are, you know, kind of moving away from using SurveyMonkey and Microsoft Forms because we now have the ability to collect that type of information through our website and through forms that go directly into our customer support database. So please check it out. But that's just some of the ways that SQF uses data. And we get a lot of it for sure. So I have three keys to utilizing data, and I'll go over that in more detail, but it's understand, transform, and act. So first of all, understand your data. Make sure you have the right perspective. It can't be too focused, and I have an example of that. It can't be too broad, okay? So you have to be right on the right level with your data. Transform it, because sometimes all you do have is an Excel spreadsheet, and that's not always the best way to look at your information. So you may need to take that information in Excel, put it into a Pareto chart, you know, use a control chart to collect your data. Maybe it's an is-is-not matrix to help you with your problem solving. Maybe it's a Meisel's diagram. And then act. Follow through with actions to improve. So make sure you have clear due dates, assign responsibilities, and communicate. I can't emphasize that enough. Communicate, communicate, over-communicate. You never can go wrong with too much communication. So just to expand on that a little bit, my first key was understanding your data. So, you know, what do we see here? Well, I see this cute, adorable little duck, and he just looks, you know, really sweet and innocent, right? But we're not looking at him in the right perspective. So when I look at him in a different light, what do I see? He's the duck that's standing out. He is the one person that's not following procedure. He's the person that, didn't listen during the training. He's the person that, refuses to wash his hands or comes to work sick and doesn't let us know. He's that anomaly, okay? And we didn't see that because we were too focused on the information. We needed to take a step back. Now, this is the right perspective, because if I step back too far, and I get that 40,000 foot view from, an airplane, what am I going to see? I'm going to see, if I'm lucky, dots that appear to be in a straight line. I'm not even going to see that they're ducks, and I'm certainly not going to pick up when one is not following the others. So again, making sure you have that right perspective. And sometimes you need to transform your data. This was my key number two. So you all may recognize, Optimus Prime there, my favorite transformer. Sometimes you do need the robot, okay? Let's just face it, okay? But sometimes you need the truck, So for example, if you have an Excel spreadsheet, you might need to transform your data into a heat map. So the example I have for that, I worked in a facility, as Chris said, several facilities, SQF certified facilities. And one of the facilities I worked in, we had seen an increasing number of presumptive positive listeria swabs. And I say increasing because if you're a site that never has any presumptive positives for your environmental monitoring program, you're probably not checking in the right spots, okay? So listeria, for example, is everywhere. And in certain facilities, salmonella is gonna be there. E. coli is gonna be there. So if you are never identifying those microbes in your zone fours and zone three testing, then you're probably not looking in the right spots, okay? So listeria is everywhere. So, we want to make sure that we have a sound environmental monitoring program. So we would see random listeria presumptive positives. We had a great corrective action program. We would do that. We would do our vector swabbing, and then, they would go away. However, we began to see an increasing number within the facility. And we had this Excel spreadsheet because that had always worked for us, because we had only had random positive swabs. So we had to take that data from our Excel spreadsheet and put it on a map of the facility. And, I'm kind of old school. So what did I do? I printed out a big map of the facility, hung it on my wall, and just took highlighters and highlighted in the facility where we were seeing those microbial hits. And patterns began to emerge. And we were able to identify the source of the listeria by using a heat map. We would have never, I don't care how long we had looked at an Excel spreadsheet, we would have never identified the source of the problem without putting it on the heat map, okay? So sometimes we do need to transform our data in order to make it useful for us. And then my third key was act on your data. So are you collecting data and using it for improvements? So a lot of times we stop at the first half of that question. Are we collecting data? Why, yes, we are. We collect a lot of data. But it's the key on the back half of that question. Are you using it for improvements? Are you prepared to respond to the answers you get on a survey? So I hear a lot where sites are so proud of their food safety culture survey, which, by the way, is not required per the code. You don't have to do a food safety culture survey. A lot of sites have elected to do that to help them monitor their food safety culture within their site, and that's fine. That is what's working for them. But are you prepared to respond to the answers you get on a survey? Because if you're not, then what kind of perception is that giving if you don't take action on the results that you get? Are you assigning due dates and specific personnel to complete actions? You know, because having the data without taking the action is useless. It's a waste of time if we don't take action. Are you creating a clear path of communication? So keeping everybody up to date on things that you're doing to improve the situation. So if you answer yes to all of these questions, then you are properly acting on your data. However, if any of these are a no, then I challenge you to go back and really take a look at the information and see what you can do to make some improvement towards acting on your data. So I'm just highlighting each of these questions again, making sure that we understand that they all need to come together to demonstrate action. Now, let's talk about the second half of our title for today, focusing on the future. So I'm going to walk you through how SQFI is using data to focus on the future. So what's beyond, you know, 2023? I'll give you a little bit of insight to some things. Okay. The first one we're going to talk about is updated code requirements. Our most frequently asked question right now is probably, when is edition 10 coming out? So we're going to talk about that today. Offer new training options. You know, each of the last couple of years, we have added a new training series. Most recently was our risk assessment bundle of training for 2024. We have a new series that, I'll give you a hint at what it's going to be. And then number three, increasing SQF professionals. So how many of you all out there, and I know a lot of our sites over the last couple of years have struggled with identifying SQF professionals, as in your practitioner or the person in charge of your food safety program, if you don't happen to be SQF certified. How many of you all have had trouble getting talent? I know a lot of sites that have lost their practitioner, some just weeks before their audit, and they have struggled to find new talent to bring in, people that are familiar with the code and know what they're doing. So, you know, we're trying to do some things to help with that for the future. Improving auditor competency. You know, I probably could have asked a poll question, you know, how many of you all have had a bad audit? Hopefully not many. Hopefully the poll would demonstrate that it's mostly good auditors. You know, that's what I'd want to hear. But of course, I want to hear about those bad situations too, because we're really focused on improving auditor competency, and we have been for the last 2 or 3 years. And I'll share today with some of the things that we've been doing. And then the last one, staying current with industry changes, because there's one thing that we know for certain: things are going to change. Okay. And so again, we'll touch on some things, you know, emerging foods. You know, how many of you all are considering things like, you know, cell grown meat? It's now been approved by the USDA for two companies to sell that to consumers. So you may be seeing that. Insect products, we are getting a lot of requests for, you know, cricket powder or certification for growing those insects to be used as ingredients. Also 3D printed foods, I find very fascinating, but it's, you know, something that I'm hearing has been around for a little bit, but that's an emerging type of product that, you know, we don't have any sites certified, and it's very interesting to learn what hazards need to be considered with that. So we gotta stay up to date. I mentioned AI earlier. So, you know, what about AI? Are you using it, considering it? We've talked about remote auditing. That came to the forefront during the pandemic when, you know, some sites were not allowing auditors on site. So that's been a change in recent years. You know, and then regulatory changes. If you're here in the US, you know, Sesame was added as of January 1, and we've actually seen some recalls this year for sesame because it, you know, was in an ingredient and a company didn't know they were buying an ingredient that had sesame in it. Or, you know, I had one person reach out and say, I've heard a rumor that sesame is being added. Well, that was 6 months after it got added. So how is that person keeping up with those industry changes? Because one thing that we know, things are going to change. Okay. So making sure we stay current. All right. So we're going to look at that first one, code requirements. All right. So edition 10, when's it coming out? Well, it takes us a minimum of 18 months to write a new code. And we typically would not write that until GFSI, which kind of governs us. We benchmark to the GFSI requirements. All of our new codes, they get benchmarked to those requirements. So unless those new requirements come out, we're typically not writing a new code. So GFSI has said by the end of 2024, they will have new requirements out. So we plan to, you know, kind of get a little bit of a jump on that and start planning for edition 10 pretty strongly in 2024. We have our SQF Unites conference coming up in New Orleans in March. That is also on our website. Registration is opened up. So if you're interested in hearing more about edition 10, please sign up to come to the conference. I'll be there so we can have a conversation about code requirements, data, whatever you want to talk about, food safety. But we'll have a lot more information there on edition 10. But, you know, we're saying at this point, it's probably 2 years before we will see a new code implemented. So we're end of 2023. So we're thinking sometime around, you know, mid to end of 2025 would be the first opportunity for us to have a new code. So for those of you that were thinking it might happen anytime, you can put your fears to rest because that's not going to be the case. But yeah, that's definitely a frequently asked question right now. Okay, so how did we use data to improve code requirements? And so one of the things we utilized was the recall data. I talked to you a little bit about this. And you know, we like to use data to update our codes and to make improvements. So what we found is recall categories prior to edition 9 is that they followed this kind of the Pareto there on the left, mostly chemical, biological coming in a near second, and then physical, a distant third. Other, that would be like regulatory warning letters and things like that, that did not necessarily come under any of those first three categories. But chemical, those undeclared allergens. And so for edition 9, we added label reconciliation requirement. So you need to reconcile your labels. And so for different facilities, that's going to mean different things. You know, I get that question that says, you know, do I have to count labels? Well, you certainly can. That is one method of label reconciliation. However, for most sites, hand counting labels is probably not going to be a feasible method of reconciliation for your labels. So maybe you're way counting, maybe you're doing cycle counts on a particular schedule. Maybe I know for, you know, in my past experience, one of the things we did was our schedulers reconciled labels the following morning so that if there was a discrepancy in the amount of labels that should have gone back into inventory, they could chase it down before the product left our building. Label reconciliation was not meant to prevent the wrong label from being used, but it was meant to capture when a wrong label was used so it could be corrected before it got out the door. So that's really what label reconciliation was about, because there were a lot of things already in the code about preventing labels from being the wrong product put in the wrong label. But we added that label reconciliation piece to help detect when there was an issue before it got to the consumer or the customer. However, what we saw after we released edition 9, that's on the Pareto there in the middle, chemical recalls went down. Biological recalls kind of stayed the same. So overall, you know, recalls kind of seemed to lessen a little bit. However, biological, listeria was the number one reason for recalls not long after we introduced edition 9. But most recently, what we've seen is that chemical is now creeping back up, and for 2023 has again become the top reason for recalls among SQF certified sites. Now, why is that? Well, because now we've got new root causes. I mentioned sesame was added as a new allergen in the US. We've seen several sesame recalls this year. Missing allergen information on labels. So no longer are we just putting the wrong product in the wrong label. What we have are labels that are wrong. They're missing the allergen information. So there was soy that wasn't identified. And, you know, soy being one of the leading allergen recalls is for soy, because that one's easily, overlooked. I'm going to tell you, a lot of ingredients have soy, and you may not even think about it having soy in it. Soy lecithin could be an ingredient, or it could be used as a processing aid. And sometimes we miss those things. So we're seeing those new root causes. So next update, you know, there may be some things that we need to focus the code on. Maybe it's emphasis on regulatory changes. You know, how are you an FDA registered site and you didn't know that as of January 1, sesame was a new allergen? And label design approval. You know, the label has to be right coming into the facility in order for the facility to put the right product in the label. So maybe we need to focus on label design approval. You know, more to come, again, for edition 9 around chemical recalls. Now, you know, I've talked a lot about different data and databases and, you know, surveys and, you know, Excel spreadsheets and all that. But you know what? SQFI has gone old school this past year. In 2023, we've been holding some brainstorming sessions with our certification bodies, our auditors, our trainers, our consultants. And we've been using post-it notes and flip charts. And we've done an activity that we call Add, Toss, or Tweak. And we actually started doing this at our conference last November. That was the first time we had done that. So we're about 11 months into doing this. We've been collecting a lot of data in preparation for edition 10. So if you could add, toss, or tweak some of the requirements in edition 9, what would you do? So are there things that we just missed that we need to add in? Are there emerging topics that we didn't consider for edition 9? Because a lot's changed since edition 9 was published in 2020. So are there some things that we need to toss? You know, we talk about it all the time. We add requirements every time there's a new edition. We add. I've heard about, you know, years ago when SQF started with SQF 1000 and SQF 2000, you know, SQF's been around over 25 years. When we first started out, the SQF code was six pages long. And now I don't even know how many pages we're up to, but it's way more than six. So every year there's a new edition we had. So is there something we need to toss out? Is there something that's no longer relevant, or something that's just basically a given that we shouldn't have to be telling people over and over again that they do? Or are there some things that we need to tweak? You know, could we clarify some language? You know, one of the things, food safety culture, we're gonna talk about that in a minute. But, you know, do we need to clarify language? One of the things I'm definitely clarifying for edition 10 is the definitions for validation and verification. If I had a poll up and you all could raise your hands, how many of you all have ever been confused over what's validating and what's verifying? So, you know, we're going to tweak our definitions there for edition 10 to make it a little bit clearer. So we'll be forming working groups in 2024. So if you've ever thought, you know what, I'd like to have some input on writing the new SQF code, you know, reach out. We have opportunities for several of our stakeholders to join us on working groups to help us write the new code. And I promise I won't make you write it on post-it notes and flip charts. And then our website forms. So again, our new website, I've mentioned that already, and we're now set up to where we can accept the feedback on new codes through our website. So once that gets turned on and we're officially accepting feedback, then you'll, if you're subscribed to the to our monthly newsletter, then you'll be one of the first to hear about it. So make sure you look for that, because we want feedback. We are begging for feedback as we prepare for our new SQF code, okay? Training options. I mentioned that. So each year for the last 3 years, I think, we've put out a new series of training. You can buy it as a bundle, or you can buy individual classes. And so we monitor that. We, you know, last year released our risk assessment bundle, and it has been, you know, very popular. And you can look at risk on several different topics, or you can take the whole bundle. There's also a risk test that you can take for free. So you can check that out on our website as well. Might help to guide you as to where you need to focus some more attention. But we do like to utilize data to determine what options are out there. You know, we collect a lot of data on training. Chris and I were just chatting as we started, and, you know, camera, no camera, you know, I'm kind of a go with the flow type person. So if Chris had said, Tammy, turn your camera on, I would have done it. But he said they're actually seeing studies where some people prefer no camera and not seeing the presenter during webinars. So, you know, we like to take all that into consideration. You know, is it webinars that are the most popular? Is it actual in-person training? There's been debate over that. I like in-person training because those of you that know me, I'm a very expressive person. So while I'm standing here in my office, my hands, even though you can't see me, my hands are waving, and, you know, and I'm standing up and talking to you today. So I prefer in-person, but some people are so happy just to take that training on demand and, you know, work at their own pace. And that's okay too. But we do track and trend those things to make sure that we're meeting the needs of our stakeholders. So we use data to do that. But we also use the top nonconformance data to also shape how we're training as well. So one of the things I mentioned, food safety culture was identified as a top minor and major nonconformance when we first implemented Edition 9 in 2021. So that the first audit was conducted May 24th of 2021. So it actually gave us about 7 months worth of data. So I extrapolated the 2021 data so you could compare what would have been a full 12 months to the 12 months of 2022. And then I extrapolated the 2023 data because, you know, we're 9.5 months in, and gave you what we theoretically think we will finish 2023 at. And you can see how the non-conformances to food safety culture has gone down. Now, if we didn't look at the data and analyze and find the root cause, you all would just think, well, you know, as sites got, you know, used to the new requirement, they did a better job of implementing. And so we could make that assumption. But when we dug into the data and actually looked at all of those nonconformances, we saw a theme. We saw auditors that were writing nonconformances to food safety culture because the site didn't have a food safety culture plan or a procedure or a program. So that wasn't the intent of our code. You know, nowhere in the SQF code does it say you have to have a food safety culture plan, procedure, or program. What it says is that your senior site leadership needs to lead a good food safety culture, and then it lists, I think, six things that the auditors and the site should be looking for to ensure that a good food safety culture is being developed, okay? So once we identified that auditors were looking for something that wasn't required, we were able to update our auditor training course. We updated our quarterly professional update meetings that all SQF auditors, technical reviewers, trainers, and consultants are required to sit in on annually. And we emphasized the true meaning of what food safety culture was and the expectation of the code. So that's just one way that we used data from our nonconformances to drive improvements to our program. So you all can do the same thing. You know, analyze your data to make sure you're identifying that true root cause so you can implement some good, strong, corrective, and preventative actions. Okay, future focus, top nonconformance trends. So everybody always asks me, what are the top nonconformances? And you know, I really hate to share that information without some context, because people think, oh, I'm gonna take those top nonconformances and I'm just gonna make sure I'm good to go for my audit, and then I'm gonna pass my audit because I don't have any of those top nonconformances. So that's not really the way we utilize top nonconformance data here at SQFI. It's not really the way that I want you all to utilize it. So how we utilize it is we look at those top nonconformances and see where we possibly need new guidance documents, where we need to develop new training so that people can strengthen. And for 2024, here's a sneak peek at some new training we've got coming out. Develop a new insight training series. So it's going to come out in 2024. Each quarter, there's going to be a new part of this series, and it is going to be fascinating. So you're going to hear from SQF professionals, and you're going to get insight from them on nonconformances and what they're seeing out in industry to help you improve and be better. So, you know, kind of my top three for 23 is pest prevention. As you can see there, out of our top 10 list, pest prevention showed up as number one, number two, and number six. You know, there are multiple requirements that fall under that pest prevention clause. And so it showed up three times on the top 10 critical list. It showed up at number three and four on the top 10 majors and number six on the minors. So when people have a problem with pest prevention, it's a big problem, is what that tells me. It only showed up at number six on the minor list, and yet it was all over the critical and major list. So yeah, pest prevention, when it's bad, it's really bad. Food safety plan showed up on the critical list six times in the top 10. 3, 4, 5, 8, 9, and 10. So it was all over the place. So within the food safety plan clause 2.4.3, there are 17 requirements there. And within those 17 requirements, six of them showed up on the top 10 critical list. Think you might need to focus on your food safety plan? You know, considering that drives pretty much everything else you do, that's a great place to start. And that's where we're training our auditors. They should start when they're conducting audits, is start with the food safety plan because it drives so much else. It also showed up on the majors at number five and number eight. And then again, it showed up as number seven on the minors. So again, when the food safety plan is bad, it's really bad, okay? It's elevating to that major and critical list. So making sure you have a good, strong food safety plan is a great start to your food safety program. And then cleaning and sanitation rounds out my top three for 2023 because it showed up as number one on the minor list and number two on the major list. So yeah, cleaning and sanitation, just making sure that you have a good method, making sure it's defined, making sure it's monitored and verified. And then, you know, validation also comes into play here in cleaning and sanitation. So making sure you understand that. And I mentioned prioritizing new guidance documents. Guess what? You guys are one of the first ones to know. We have new guidance documents that will be published to the website just in a matter of days, I think. So we've got three new ones that have been written and reviewed. So validation, verification, and complaint management. So again, be checking our website frequently because you will see those appear in very soon. And then let's look at SQF professionals. So, you know, I'm talking auditors, I'm talking SQF practitioners, trainers, consultants, technical reviewers, those all fall under professionals. So one of the ways that we used for 2023 to improve was we conducted an auditor registration survey early in 2023. And what we wanted to see was we have many people that will start the process of becoming an SQF auditor. They may do a preliminary application. They may take the auditor training course, but then they never complete the application or registration process. And we wanted to know why, because we need auditors. You know, we at any given day have approximately 600 SQF auditors that are conducting roughly 12,000 audits a year, and that's a lot of audits per person, right? So I think that's probably going to work out to about 20 audits per person a year. So some do more, some do less. So we need more auditors. And so what we found was that people start that process and then get into the middle of it and find they don't meet all parts of the criteria. So some of the things that we have put in place to improve on that is better communication. We reviewed the auditor criteria. We updated it a couple times in 2023. But our top reasons were it was too difficult, they were unaware of the requirements when they started the process, or it was too overwhelming. Because you do have to fill out an application. It is a little bit lengthy. You have to document 160 audit hours. You have to document 5 years of industry experience. You have to submit, you know, a few training certificates and things like that. So our action plan, provide a guidance document on registering to become an auditor to try to address that issue that it was too difficult. So, you know, we'll be providing that. Review requirements for excessive or redundant requirements. So, you know, we are looking at what we can do to help streamline that communication process. And then updating our training to encourage potential auditors to work with a certification body, because those certification bodies have to sponsor. You have to have a sponsoring certification body to become an SQF auditor. So get that sooner rather than later, because we find a lot of candidates for auditors, they will wait until after they've got everything together before they try to find a sponsor. Find that sponsor early on in the process, and they are there to help you. I can assure you, they are all great at working with new auditors. Now, what are we doing to, you know, focus on the future? So for 2024, you're going to hear information about professional pathways, especially if you come to the conference, you will hear us talk about that. We've got that identified to be a topic in a general session. And so, you know, how nice would it be if you as a company were looking for an SQF practitioner and you could go onto our website and find a list of registered SQF practitioners who have met a minimum amount of training and experience to become an SQF registered practitioner. Okay, so, you know, we hope to have that implemented in 2024. Also, witness auditors. So, you know, each auditor is required to have a witness audit every 2 years at a minimum. And, you know, I've often said that bad witness auditors breed bad auditors. So back to that question I asked you earlier about, you know, have you ever had a bad auditor? Hopefully not, but, you know, if you did, you know, we want to take care of that. because witness auditors, good ones, will provide constructive criticism. We also want to encourage intern programs. I've got a certification body right now that started an intern program last year, and we're seeing some success out of it. And I look forward to seeing, you know, what they're going to do in the future with that. And then we're going to continue our FMI scholarship program. We offer 15 scholarships a year. The deadline just passed on that for this year. But, you know, if you have an up-and-coming college student that would qualify, please check it out on our website and we want to get them in early, okay? And then auditor competency. And I know I'm running out of time, Chris, so I'm going to try to get through this quickly so we can have plenty of time for Q&A at the end. So consideration of many data streams, you know, auditor pool. You know, we've seen many retirements this year. We've seen people that have been promoted and then just don't have enough time to be auditors in addition to their regular job. And then we've seen some people that return to industry. They decide that auditing's not for them. So we're in the process of collecting a survey result on some of the auditors that we've lost this year. Audit duration, you know, the requirement is 40% of the time is spent in the production areas, and each site has to have a justification for their audit duration. And so we have closely monitored that and worked with our certification bodies. Predictability. So again, I mentioned those improved witness audits, you know, helping to drive the knowledge of the auditor. Complexity of the code and too many codes. You know, we're going to be analyzing that for addition 10. And then auditor requirements. We've assessed those, and there's going to be some changes coming for that, as well as professional development tools. We created a self-assessment to help auditors to continuously improve. Okay, again, some of the things that we're doing in the future. So those scholarships to recruit new talent, streamlining our code requirements, and providing that feedback mechanism on audit report reviews. Also, we've launched a new site survey on our new website. So if your site, you've had an audit and you want to provide feedback to us, it can be done anonymously through our website. But there is a place to, you know, give us feedback on both your auditor and your site, your certification body. Okay. And then again, the last one, industry changes. So, you know, what do these numbers represent? And I think this is a very telling story, because what a lot of people are not, you know, kind of might be shocked at is these are the last audit scores of all of the SQF sites that had recalls in the first quarter of 2023. There are 62 of them. Some of the things I want to point out, all the light blue on the left there are all excellent scores. Five of them scored 100s. All the dark blues are those that fell into that good range that we saw. And then the last one, that one lone yellow one over there, that site scored a complies rating, meaning they'll go into a 6-month surveillance program. But notice what's missing. Not one single site that had a recall failed their audit. Only one site scored lower than an 86 and fell into surveillance. So what does that mean? It means that a recall can happen to anyone at any time. You know, you're just one mistake away, one employee away, one missing hazard away from a recall. So we want you all to make sure you're using data to predict the risk that you have to having recalls. And so hopefully some of the information I've presented today will help you think about things in a different way. And just the point that I would add on here, food safety culture is key. No site should ever have to get ready for an audit. And just to give you a little bit of, you know, clarification there. So the mean or the average score of all those sites, 94.84. And the average days, we do track the average days since their last audit, 203. You know, some sites had a recall 2 weeks after the auditor was there. Some had a recall 360 days after the auditor was there. But we're tracking that to see. You know, as you can see, it's been about, on average, 6 months. So just as a reminder, because people ask, well, that how did that happen? You know, we get that, you know, how did a site have a recall that's SQF certified? Well, just remember, audit day is that site's best day of the year. So they're putting their best foot forward. We've cleaned everything up. We've you know, polished everything. We're not running our difficult products. We're scheduling something that's easy, you know, so we're getting ready for the audit. And I challenge you not to get ready for the audit. I challenge you to you know, put your best foot forward every day and see what kind of improvements that you may have. Okay, again, how can you apply forward thinking by utilizing data? Focus on the right programs. Top nonconformances do not sync up with reasons for recalls. We saw that. I mentioned pest prevention, and yet in my reasons for recalls, pest prevention doesn't ever make it there, okay? Our food safety plan is in our top nonconformances, but it doesn't make it into, you know, nobody had a recall because they didn't have something on their flowchart. So making sure that you understand what programs you need to focus on. Get to the true root cause, implement corrective and preventative action. Lots of different data streams there, complaints, internal audit findings. You know, look at everything. Revisit the food safety plan often, not just the minimum annual. How many times do I see audit reports that say, yeah, we, you know, reviewed our food safety plan on such and such date? So what that's telling me is they're just doing the minimum. You should be revisiting your food safety plan after recalls, after you look at a adverse data trend. I mentioned environmental monitoring, pest prevention, and complaints. Changes in management. A lot of sites lost their SQF practitioner. That's a great time to review your food safety plan. New products, processes, suppliers, equipment, all those things are addressed in the code. Regulatory changes, you know, SESAMI, FSMA 204, the traceability rule, lots of changes that are coming. And key takeaways and questions. This is my last slide, Chris. Identify ways data can assist in your continuous improvement. Utilize that data for growth opportunities and gain a better understanding of what the future holds for your company. So I think Chris is going to come back on. If there are any questions, and I see at least one. We will take those now, I think.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, thanks so much, Tammy. So get a little feedback. Let's see. Okay, there we go. So thanks so much. I think, you know, today's presentation was fantastic. You know, I know we talked about this before we got started, but I really think that the way that SQF takes and utilizes all the data presented is just a really fantastic idea. And so we do have a couple questions. I think this first one kind of goes back to your add, toss, and tweak idea, which I really like. So the first question is going to be on in regards to monitoring food safety culture. You mentioned specifically surveys. We found that surveys worked well for our business. However, can you give some examples of employee engagement that you've seen work at other facilities?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, one of the things with food safety culture, I always say food safety culture was inherent in the code. We just called it out. We attached a name to it for Edition 9. So there was nothing, if you look at our guidance document on food safety culture, and that's a great resource at the end of all of our guidance documents, we have what we call the Road to Rio. So it looks at the records, interviews, and observations that the site should be considering and that the auditor may look at when they're on site. And there's not one single thing new for Edition 9 that wasn't already something that should have been looked at under previous editions. So food safety culture, again, is not a program. It's not something that you can train people. You can't go in and say, okay, I need you to have a good food safety culture and create this fancy PowerPoint presentation that basically tells people they're going to have a good food safety culture. You're going to train people on doing the right things. And so I often say that, you know, food safety culture is people doing the right things even when they think no one's watching. So if I can trust you to wash your hands and do it correctly every time you go out into the production area, that's a sign of food safety culture. And that's one of the ways I used to monitor. You know, we were fortunate we had a camera in the hand wash area. And I turned it into a competition between shifts. I would watch as people were coming on shift, and I would count the first 100 people that came through the hand wash, and I would mark down how many people washed their hands properly. And then at our quarterly meetings with all of our employees, I'd say, all right, now first shift was at 95%. You know, second shift, you got to make some improvement there because you were at 88%. And guess what? You had a supervisor that walked through and didn't wash his hands. So you got dinged twice for that one. But, you know, coming up with those creative ways of making sure people are doing the right things, even when nobody's watching. And a survey, and one of the things why I say that, you know, some sites have had luck with surveys, I never really, you know, liked a survey for measuring food safety culture. You know, I wanted to measure it by observations. You know, if you're walking around and I see the plant manager bend down and pick up a piece of scrap paper on the floor, that's food safety culture. If I see people putting things away when they get done with them, that's food safety culture. When I see a desk that's organized, or I see a maintenance cart where everything's cleaned and put away, that's food safety culture. And you don't capture that in a survey. But we've had a lot of sites that have had good luck with surveys. So I'm not gonna say it's impossible, but I would say just, you know, rely on a lot of observations to determine whether you have a good food safety culture or not. Yeah, anybody can say they do, yeah.
Fantastic information. So we've got one more question. We've still got a few minutes. So if you've got any last minute questions, whether it's about Tammy's favorite Autobot or, you know, 3D printed foods, you still got a few minutes to get them in. So the next question we've got, how far, this is a two-part question, how far do you think the data collected from food recalls, foodborne illnesses, and outbreaks is being used to focus on food safety today? And then the second part of that question is, do you think it is linked directly in a major way, linked directly or to in a minor way to sanitation records?
Yeah, so I know from from SQFI's perspective, we use food recall data a lot. We focus on, you know, we break down recalls. When we see a major recall, we will pull the audit report for that site. We will look for the red flags within that audit report that might have predicted, you know, when the auditor was there that the site might have a problem with that. You know, I've witnessed audits. I sometimes get an opportunity to go out and witness audits. So, for example, you know, I saw a recall come in this year where there's the product has a top label and a bottom label. And so the recall was because the labels were mismatched. And so the product in it contained product that matched one of the labels, but then the bottom label, I think it was wrong. And that's where all the allergen information and the nutrition information is. And so I witnessed that site being audited. And guess what? One of the nonconformances were they had multiple labels on the line at one time. So they weren't, you know, doing a complete changeover of labels when they went from one product to the next. So, and that was a red flag. And the fact that a few months later, they had a recall for that exact same reason, you know, led me to think that they didn't identify either the true root cause or they didn't implement corrective and preventive actions adequately. So really for 2023, we have hit root cause and corrective and preventative action hard, because I think that's where a lot of failures are. You know, we had another recall that, you know, had a label issue as well, and the label was wrong. It was missing an allergen information. And that site had a recall 6 months after the auditor was there, because the auditor identified it, that they weren't doing label verification. That was a nonconformance. And they put in a corrective action that said, well, we will start doing label verification. But there was no correction included. They didn't go back and look at any previous labels to verify. So I just think, you know, as far as sanitation, yeah, there's, I know there's recalls out there that go back to sanitation and cleaning. But at the same time, you know, we're using it to look at where those red flags are. And it's not always cleaning and sanitation. Most of the time it's something like a label program that they don't have fully implemented, or a changeover program. So definitely sanitation can, you know, play a part in some of those recalls, but it's probably fewer than what you think.
That's fantastic. Well, I'll tell you what, so we're out of time for today. I want to thank you again for, you know, coming on and speaking with us. If the audience has any questions after the event today, you know, feel free to reach out. Give us about 24 hours and you will see this posted on our YouTube channel and different various media platforms in case you want to share it with any of your coworkers. Once again, Tammy, thank you so much for all the valuable information today. I love the fact that you guys are doing a working group, you know, for the 2024 code editions. You know, a lot of information about the guidance documents to look forward to on the website over the next few days. Thank you again so much. Have a great afternoon.
All right. Thank you all.